Hey, 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 how y'all doing? It's your girl, Didi Leggett, aka the Core Queen. I am back with another episode of the Core Queen Chat, and I have a phenomenal guest with me today, y'all. I mean, I won't hold it against him that he's from Alabama, but y'all welcome my friend, Dr. Brian Walker, to the show.
I appreciate that. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. You know, y'all know how I feel about Alabama. Jeez.
Great people in Alabama.
Well,
Mobile and Birmingham, anyway. That's
my I will so say, you know, maybe sometimes they're all right. They be on the first 48 a little bit too much for me, but
right, y'all.
But welcome to the Core Queen Chat. I'm so excited to have you today.
Hey, I'm humbled to be here. Thank you so much,
DD. Welcome. Well, I'm going to let the people know a little bit about you because I think you're a pretty stellar person. You know, you got some accolades here. I may not be able to pronounce them all, but no.
Lord have mercy. No, I hear you.
Y'all, Dr. Brian Walker has been a physician for the last 22 years, working in family medicine, emergency medicine, and urgent care medicine. He attended medical school at Des Moines University and completed his family medicine residency at Mayo Clinic. In Rochester, Minnesota. He is board certified in family medicine with the American Board of Family Medicine. He is a fellow with the American College of Healthcare Executives and American Academy of Family Practice. For the last 19 years, he has worked with patients in the Charlotte and Raleigh areas of North Carolina and currently practices at Duke University Health Systems in urgent care. In October, he looks forward to being back in the Charlotte area working with Novant Health. Through the years, Dr. Walker has seen up close the effects of childhood trauma and it changes and how it changes our mental and physical lives. Welcome to the show. This man is decorated, okay?
No, thank you for saying that. No, I appreciate that.
Yes, listen. So first, before we get started, I just wanted to let the audience know, as well as just remind people that I did write a book called Breaking the Cycle of Childhood Trauma.
Yes.
And that's why I'm really passionate about talking about this, because I don't think people really correlate the two things, childhood trauma and physical ailments.
No, absolutely. We do not often.
Right.
And we don't do it enough.
So can you briefly explain, from a clinical perspective,
yes, ma'am,
what qualifies as childhood trauma?
You know what? Very good question to start off with. You know, I would think that childhood trauma, I would define it as anything that is frightening, anything that is violent, that a child experiences, that affects them into adulthood, that affects their safety. And when I say violent, I don't mean just physical violence. It could be emotional. It could be mental. Anything that they go through that they perceive as dangerous, that affects them and their health throughout their lives. And so that's the challenging thing about this whole thing.
I like that. Yep, I agree.
I mean, if you imagine your body as a house, right? Somebody or something comes into your home. And I mean, they mess it up. They they crack the foundation. They break all the windows. They tear up everything that they can. And on the way out, they set it on fire. You know, now you get away to safety in that moment. And, you know, the EMS trucks come, the fire trucks come. They put out the fire. They get you to safety. They get you the help you need to get back on your feet. And you do. It takes a lot of time, but you do.
Right.
And it takes a lot of time for your house to get back in order. But it does.
Yeah.
At least on the outside, right? It looks nice. You know, you walk in, it looks nice. But here's the thing. The alarm system that you have in your house, it's been going off. And it went off the way it's supposed to. It alerted you to everything going on in that home at the time. But the problem is that even after everything is physically back in order, that alarm system is still going off. That alarm system, it's waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
It's waiting for the another trauma. And that affects us in a lot of different ways. It affects us in how we treat other people and the relationships that we have with other people. And it affects us how we manage on our jobs. It affects us how we manage our family. It affects everything that we do in life. Mm-hmm. And so that alarm system, we kind of have to learn how to cut that off. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I kind of tell people in terms of, no, not only childhood trauma, but just trauma period. Yeah. But especially childhood trauma, because we don't always recognize it when we get to be adults.
Okay.
And so, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to come on your show and talk about it, because, you see this with patients all the time, and it's just such a challenging thing to deal with in the office. Yeah.
Yeah. I could imagine. So can you explain like how childhood trauma actually manifests physically? Like, how does that show up?
Boy, how much time do we have? So let's talk about some of the obvious things, right? You know, so if somebody comes in and let's say, for instance, they're experiencing, you know, some anxiety or some depression, you know, sometimes they've got a long history of it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a very situational thing.
Okay.
You know, say, well, you know, I'm going through a divorce. The kids are being taken away from me. I lost my job, or I'm being put on a performance improvement plan at my job, which is stressful. Right. You know, so I don't know how long I'm going to have this job now. You know, so sometimes it's a situational thing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people can't put their finger on it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's one of those things where you say, well, okay. You know, you sit, you listen, you know, you're trying to get a feel for what's going on. And I'll be honest with you, Didi, sometimes it takes two or three visits to get down to what they really want to tell you.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's and sometimes it's a revelation for them, too. Mm. You know, when they're telling you this, you say, wait, you know, but and it takes a little time sometimes because they don't know you.
Right.
And so they're trying to kind of feel you out a little bit, too, to say, hey, you know, is this private between you and me?
Right.
You know, are you going to go out and tell people outside of here, you know, what's going on? You know, so it takes a little time for them to trust you. But then they'll kind of come out sometimes and tell you and say, well, shucks, you know, I mean, I've been dealing with this since this happened. Mm. And oftentimes it happened in childhood. You know, whether it is a sexual assault, whether it is something emotional that they went through with a parent, or, you know, something mental that they went through at that time at school. You know, it could be any number of things, but a lot of times in childhood, people will go through things and they'll harbor it. And so sometimes it manifests itself as anxiety, depression, or a panic attack. And they just don't know why. Sometimes they're coming in to see me because they say, you know, I just don't want to feel this way anymore. Just give me some medicine. Mm. Just give me some medicine.
Wow.
To make it go away. A pill for every ill. And so sometimes you'll get a kind of a resentful type of thing at first because they say, look, I didn't come for you to talk to you about all this.
Right.
You know, I just want the pill. Mm-hmm. My friend is taking it. They feel better with it. So just give it to me and then everything would be all right. Sometimes people will have chronic pain. Mm-hmm. They'll come in and not know exactly, well, why am I feeling so bad? Mm-hmm. You know, I hurt all over, you know, this type of thing. Those type of things are a little bit, you know, a little bit more challenging because people actually do have chronic pain.
Right.
And people actually do have, you know, some physical things going on, you know, for instance, you know, immune system type stuff, you know, going on like lupus that can make you feel that way. Fatigue and pain and rheumatoid arthritis, you know, joint swelling and pain and stuff like that. So you do kind of have to work that stuff up physically.
Okay.
But then if we're not finding anything, you know, going on, then, you know, we kind of move towards, okay, well, let's talk about some other things going on in your life. You know, let's talk about, you know, things that are going on, situational things that are going on. And if you kind of use those why questions, well, why do you think this is going on? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, why is that? And the further you go back, you will often find the thing that started it all.
Right.
Right. You know, those type of things. And so, you know, it's a challenging thing, but we as, you know, physicians and nurse practitioners and PAs, you know, we're all kind of in the same boat. Right. We're all trying to find that one thing. You know, sometimes it's a fatigue type question.
Mm.
You know, people come in often saying, well, you know, I'm tired just all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand, you know, I've been getting enough sleep, I think. I don't snore. I don't have sleep apnea. That's not keeping me up at night. But I don't know why I'm tired all the time. And again, you have to kind of work that stuff right up. You know, so usually what I'll do, you know, it's okay. You know, I do want to talk to you for some time. But the challenging thing is that we do have a limited amount of time.
Right.
So I can't sit there with you for an hour, right, you know, and not in urgent care. But so I have to kind of say, okay, let me rule out some of the bad things, right? You know, so typically what I'll do, you know, if somebody comes in with fatigue, you know, I'll say, okay, let me get a complete blood count. Within that, I've got white blood cells. I know that those are going to be elevated if you have some inflammation, infection type stuff going on, if you're fatigued. And usually I can get that back in a few minutes of your visit at the place that I work at. Let me check your electrolytes, your sodium, potassium, your chloride, your calcium. That can make you feel fatigued if that's off. You know, your kidney function and stuff is in there too. I can get that back in a few minutes. Let me check a urinalysis on you, especially in our older people who, you know, kind of like this 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You can be fatigued if you have an infection and you don't necessarily have to have burning with urination, an increased frequency of urination. I can get that back in a few minutes. Now, one thing I cannot get back in a few minutes is your thyroid test. Mm-hmm. Now, if your thyroid is off, that can make you feel fatigued, you know, but I usually get it back the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so people usually come back or we'll review the stuff that we can that day. And we'll review the thyroid stuff when it comes back. And if it's pristine, you know, you say, okay, well, what's going on? You know, and then we can kind of delve into a little bit deeper. Sometimes people will tell you things at that point. Sometimes they won't.
Right.
And like I said, sometimes it takes a couple of visits or something like that. And I'll have them come back and say, well, you know what? We don't have enough time to delve into everything after we did all this stuff today, but come on back and see me when I'm next back in the office and we can kind of talk about some of this more this fatigue stuff and what's going on, especially with me having a family medicine background.
Right.
You know, even though I do urgent care, I will try to follow up with people in the office, especially if they can't get in to see their primary doc.
Right.
You know, because you know how that is. I mean, sometimes you can get in. Sometimes you can get in the next day. Sometimes it's a few weeks.
Right.
Sometimes a few months. Yeah. You know. So I said, well, just come on back, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. And then oftentimes you can find out what's going on.
Okay.
At that point.
And see, I had these questions because I never put these things together.
Yeah.
A few things actually, because as a child, going through so much trauma.
Right.
I didn't realize that the trauma I was going through was causing some physical things.
Yes, ma'am.
So, like, for example, I always, like, thought that because I was born with this hernia that I was having these visceral reactions to food.
Right.
And I was literally vomiting all the time. Mm. I was in the ER all the time as a kid.
Yeah.
Not realizing, like, this is really, like, mental.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm adult, I really realize my relationship with food is kind of the same now. Like, I have a visceral reaction to certain foods based off a trauma that I had as a kid.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, wow, that's really, writing this book really opened up a lot of these things.
Yes.
And then also I was having panic attacks all the time in church. Like, why am I having panic attacks? What is happening? Not really realizing, okay, these things are correlated, that things that were happening to me with members in the church. And I didn't know that this physically was happening to me.
Yeah.
And then this is crazy. It just happened. So a few months ago, when we were wrapping up the book, we were about to release it. And I was terrified to tell my mom about the book.
Right.
I was terrified to tell her. I didn't know how to tell her. And I was in the emergency room back to back. And I'm like, what is wrong with my stomach? I'm like waking up out of my sleep with horrible stomach pain.
Yes.
The doctor's like, everything is fine. Like, all your blood work's fine. CAT scan's fine. I'm like, no, I am feeling these pains. Something is wrong.
Right.
and it was literally stress.
Yes. And I'm so happy you told me that, and thank you for sharing that. I am so happy you said that, because people will come in with that digestive issues all the time, and it's something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everything is looking great. Mm-hmm. You know, I've sent you to a specialist. They've scoped you. You know, they've done a colonoscopy. They've kind of scoped you from the top. We've looked at your digestive system from top to bottom. Everything is pristine. Everything looks great on you. We've done CAT scans of your abdomen, of your pelvis, and everything looks great. So why are you feeling this way? Yeah. What's going on? And it often is like that. I'll share something personal as well with you. When I was a kid, you know, and we mentioned Alabama, you know, my mom was a teacher. My dad was a teacher too, but then he stopped teaching and he started his own construction company. And he was killed violently and down there. And I was 7 and my sister was 5. Now, I will tell you that that affected me for a lot of years. Now, for me, you know, it was, you know, abdominal pain, that type of stuff, sometimes bedwetting, that type of stuff. You know, I mean, up until I was like 10 years old, 11 years old. And but I remember there was a teacher where my mom taught at, and she was a hard teacher. You know, she was hard on everybody, but she cared. And that's what I was saying. When you get somebody to trust you and open up to you, you know, sometimes they can do things that your parents can't do sometimes, you know, and she did that for me. And so I just remember being able to function after that, you know, not having that, you know, that having to go through that anymore. Yeah. Now, some things I did go through as a teenager and even as a young adult, you know, with my father's death, I was always, as a Black man, not afraid, but just overwhelmed when I had to explain to somebody, if I thought that I might have to explain to somebody how he died, because, you know, I could just see it, especially people who didn't look like me.
Yeah.
You know, I said, okay, you know, they're going to look at me and say, oh man, you know, another Black man died by violence, being a statistic and all this stuff, but not knowing, but them not knowing the circumstances surrounding that.
Right.
And everything. And so, cause I can remember when I got accepted to, medical school, and I had to go take a physical, you know, and there was a Indian doctor in Chicago, and the look on her face, you know, when she was asking me, well, you know, how'd your father die? And, you know, so I could have said anything, right. You know, but I told the truth, and the look on her face, I was just like, you know, I knew I shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was one of those things. And even today, you know, I do feel some kind of way about that. You know, so, you know, that is just something that I can relate to when people are talking to me.
Yeah.
You know, about some childhood trauma and how that affects you, you know, even as an adult.
Yes.
You know, trying to kind of get that into your head. You know, my sister was 5, so I think she kind of dissociated in that, because she doesn't remember him at all. You know, and I so, you know, usually about that time, you know, you kind of remember some things,
right.
even if it's a fleeting memory.
Yeah.
But I think that she just kind of dissociated from it, period. You know, because I remember, you know, now I do have fleeting memories as well.
Right.
But I do remember him.
Yeah.
And I remember that she remembered him, you know, at least at that time, you know,
she's so, protecting herself.
Right. Yeah. And so, but yeah, I mean, I remember that. And so when I was hearing your story, I said, oh my goodness, I can relate to that, especially the digestive issues and stuff like that. Cause I have people come in all the time and we'll, you know, go through that and they'll say, well, I have IBS and I'm taking medicines for IBS, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, I have a lot of constipation or diarrhea associated with it. Now, sometimes it is. Sometimes it's, you know, very often is a physical thing.
Right.
You know, but the more you talk to people, you know, and you say, okay, well, hey, why don't we try this? Why don't we try, you know, maybe a behavioral health specialist mm-hmm. to kind of help you. Because now I'm family medicine. I did urgent care medicine. You know, I did ER for a long time. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm a, you know, counselor or something right. like that. You know, so when I need help from my counselor colleagues, mm-hmm. my psychology and psychiatry colleagues, hey, I get them on board.
Yeah.
You know, to say, hey, listen, I think we have somebody that could really, you know, use your help. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that is a win-win situation.
Absolutely.
For the patient.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
So how does the body remember trauma that even the mind may not remember?
Good question. Well, the body is a very smart machine.
Yes.
You know, body is smart, man. I mean, you know, your mind will put it away because, to your point earlier, it's trying to protect itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, hey, I need to be in the moment doing this thing right now, and I can't afford to think about that. Mm. Oh, but your body remembers. The physical body remembers. Mm-hmm. So it's going to manifest itself some kind of way, yeah. even when you're trying to suppress it mentally and emotionally. It will come out with digestive problems. It will come out in fatigue. It will come out with immune responses, right? You're saying, well, hey, why am I breaking out in this rash? Mm. You know, why am I having hives? You know, even every now and then when I get really stressed, I'll break out in hives behind my ears, really itchy, and itchy rash. I'm like, what the heck? But when I calm down, that's okay. It goes away. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I have to take some Zyrtec or something like that to get it to go away. But that is a real issue.
Yeah.
You know, and I have patients that come in all the time with rashes and stuff like that. And I have patients come in that know exactly what's going on. Mm. Say, hey, I mean, they'll have a rash all over. I have a colleague who she just got a job working someplace else. And so she'll come and work on the weekends. Mm-hmm. But the job is stressing her out. So, I mean, she came in 2 weeks ago with a rash all over, hives all over, and just said, I got to get out of this job.
Wow.
You know, because the body, it will manifest yep. itself some kind of way. That immune response will kick in and say, okay, well, let me tell you what's going on since you won't listen to me, you know? And so it'll do that. Digestive issues, like we talked about, chronic pain is another one.
Yeah.
People will come in and say, I hurt all over, you know? Now, sometimes it turns out to be a fibromyalgia type of situation, mm-hmm. sometimes not. But again, having that conversation with people saying, well, you know what? Now, you're a young person, you're 22, 23 years old. Talk to me. What's going on?
Yeah.
Because this is not normal, you know, especially after, you know, a couple of visits, if they've had with you two or three visits, mm-hmm. you've worked them up, you know, laboratory wise, you know, physically, and you're just not finding anything or the story is inconsistent. Mm-hmm. You know, it just doesn't, quote unquote, make sense.
Right.
It doesn't make physiologic or anatomic sense.
Right.
You know, that's kind of, you know, we'll say, okay, you know, sometimes this is a somatization, you know, somatic complaints where it's just like, well, you know what? I'm listening to the story and it just doesn't gel.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another clue, you know, to say, well, okay, maybe this is, there's something different going on. And people want to talk. They want to open up.
They do.
But like I said, going back to that trust issue, they want to know that, hey, you're not going to call me crazy, you know, because the minute they think that, that you've lost them.
Done.
It's done. You might as well pack it up.
Yeah.
And go home because it's done after that. But once they know to say, hey, listen, you can trust me. Let's talk about this. They'll talk to you about their family. They'll talk to you about what happened as a kid. Especially, which is nice because then if it's something that I can help you with as an urgent care physician, I'll do that. As a family medicine physician, I'll do that. But if it's something where I need some help, like I said, I need some help from my counselor colleagues, my psychology or my psychiatry colleagues, then I'll get them on board.
Right.
And people want help. They want it to end, you know, But it takes time. You know, yeah. Even when you get people on board, it'll take some time for that to resolve itself. Yeah. If it ever resolves, you know, but at least they can get to the point where they can kind of control it and they can have, you know, a better life, you know, than that they're having at the current time.
Yeah. When you said that, it just, a light bulb just clicked in my head because I was, I retired Air Force. So
Got you.
20 years in the Air Force. And I'm just thinking all of the times that I was like in the clinic, cause I was just in pain all the time. And I just realized like I was stressed out.
Right.
Cause I'm like, I don't go to the doctors that much. I mean, I still go cause there are some ongoing issues just from being in for that long. But the, what I thought was chronic issues was really stress.
Yeah. And stress is real.
Yes.
But you know, I mean, and even, and I have to admit, that's one thing I think that we could do better as medical professionals, looking back on it, we can do a much better job at managing people's stress. Now, we give it a lot of lip service a lot of times. Mm-hmm. We're starting now to realize how much of a physical effect that it has. Mm-hmm. You know, people are having heart attacks, they're having strokes, you know, kidneys are going out. You know, people are having chronic shortness of breath, you know, all because of stress.
Yeah.
Like I said, stress on a job, stress from family,
stress
from a kid, you know, just stress, period. It can kill. And so, you know, what I've been trying to tell my patients is that, hey, listen, I know it sounds cliche-ish, but you got to get out there. You got to exercise more. And a lot of times we're not doing that, right? You know, we've got to eat better.
Yes.
You know, we got to watch the foods that we're eating. Because a lot, I mean, you think about it. There was a, I mean, we get off topic, but there was a gentleman who passed away recently. His name was Juanza Kanjufu. And educator from Chicago. Changed my life, really. He really, really did. But he was a vegetarian. He didn't ask us to be vegetarians, but he was just like, look, you got to eat better.
Yes.
You got to exercise. You know, he had a book out called Countering the Conspiracies to Destroy Black Boys. And that changed my life, man. You know, I read that book. My parents read that book. My mother read that book. Changed my life, helped to change my life, really did. And that decreased a lot of stress in my life. And so, but yeah, people got to realize stress is manageable, but you got to recognize it.
Yes.
But, you, but the problem is that you can't see stress, right? And so patients don't give it much thought about that could be the cause of their problem.
Yeah.
Physicians often don't give it a lot of thought because it's not something I can physically test you for. You know, I can't do a blood test. I can't do an X-ray. You know, I can't send you to a specialist for that. You know, now you in theory, I can. You know, in terms of you know, sending you
a mental health specialist,
right? but you have to recognize it first, right? From what I do, if I'm not entertaining that thought, it's like one of my professors told me earlier. He said, Brian, if you don't think about it, you know, it'll manifest itself and you'll miss it. If you don't think about it, you'll miss it. So you have to think about those things. You know, if things aren't making sense physically, you have to think about, well, you know, this could be an emotional thing. This could be a mental thing, you know. And so, and that's a hard conversation to have sometimes, ODD.
Because that's one of my questions. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's down low on my list. Because I was like, the question is actually, how do you explain to a patient that their symptoms may have an emotional or trauma related origin without minimizing their experience?
Right, right. Well, you know what? I think for a medical professional, you just have to be sincere. You know, we have to truly be sincere about it and say, hey, listen, you know, I wanted to talk to you about something, you know, I wanted to kind of give you some feedback about what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing from you. And this is what we've done so far. And you list everything that you've done. Say, you know, we tested for this. You're really not showing us anything, which is good news. you know, and I approach it like that. Say, hey, we haven't found anything physically.
I'm sorry.
I said, we haven't found anything physically. And that's good news, you know, but let's talk about some other things that might be going on. And I might not mention the word stress. I might not mention the word anxiety or panic attack. I may not mention the word depression because those are trigger words, right? But I will ask them, say, hey, listen, tell me about what's going on in your job. How's that going? You know, tell me about your family. I mean, you mentioned this before. Mm-hmm. How's that going? You know, you have some people that live with you. Tell me the relationship and the dynamic about that. Tell me about you. You know, tell me what's going on in your job. How are you getting along with the folks over there? And you'd be surprised about how many people, especially the job. Man, let me tell you about this and that. Boy, that, you know, this and that. And then as they're talking, even they start to realize to say, hey, you know what? Maybe there's something else going on here. And then you can talk about, you know, say, okay, well, you know, have you ever considered the possibility of anxiety or panic attack? You know, now we do have tests that we do in the office for anxiety, you know, or depression and stuff like that. And so people, you know, often answer honestly about that, you know, but I think all in all, people want to get better. So they're willing to tell it to you, but you have to mention it in such a way that they don't feel like they're being judged.
Because,
Well,
because here's the thing with that, because let's say I went to the ER the second time that I went for my stomach, right?
Yes.
And I know I'm like, there is something physically wrong. Like there is literally something physically wrong, I'll get to that in a second. But if they would have told me, you need to go see somebody about your, sir, something is wrong.
Right.
But it was something wrong, but the stress was causing the pain.
Right.
But there was something physically wrong.
Physically wrong. And that's what I'm saying. You have to rule that out first. And I would not bring up the mental stuff on the first visit. Uh-huh. Right. Because to your point, there could be two things going on at once, right? You could have stress going on, but maybe that stress is causing the physical thing to manifest itself more. That is a possibility.
Yeah.
And so, because the last thing you want to do is be in the emergency room and somebody coming in with chest pain and you talking about, well, you know, this is just anxiety, go home, and they've actually been having a heart attack.
Right.
That's that, that would be very bad. That would be awful.
I'm suing y'all.
Right. So no, you better run those tests.
Yeah. But see, that was the problem. So the only reason I even knew it was wrong with me, I get a colonic every 3 months.
Sure.
And he said, you should have just came to me. Mm. He said the stress was literally causing your digestive tract to like your intestines to just, He was like, that's all it was. It was like, you needed to be cleansed out because you were not, your food wasn't digesting like it should.
Right.
Because of the stress, it was holding on to it.
There you go.
I was like,
there you go. And it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, we as we who practice Western medicine, right? I think that we need to engage people more about what they're doing and embrace that a little bit more too. Yeah. You know, because you mentioned colonics and stuff like that. You know, there are some people who practice Western medicine, oh man, that's a bunch of phooey, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. There are people who do acupuncture. Mm-hmm. And we know that works, you know, for a lot of things. Where I went to medical school, you know, I'm a doctor of osteopathic medicine. Mm-hmm. So we did a lot of manipulation, you know, and stuff like that. And I know that works. Mm-hmm. Now, does it work for every single thing? No.
Right.
You know, if you're having a heart attack, I'm not going to go manipulate you.
We hope
you
know. Not.
But it has its place. And that's my point is that everything has its place.
Yeah.
Colonics have their place. Acupuncture has its place. You know, Eastern medicine has its place. Mm. So everything has its place to make you whole.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
You know, and so no, you don't have to take a pill for every doggone thing. You know, most good doctors don't want that anyway.
Right. I agree.
They want to get you off as many of those pills as possible.
Yeah.
You know, so they're going to tell you, say, hey, listen, I want to get you off of this diabetes medicine. I believe we can do it.
Yeah.
I believe that if you change your diet and you get in that gym and exercise, I believe we can get you off of this medicine.
Hire the core queen. She got you. I got you. I will help you unbig that back.
That's right. I hear that. But, you know, but yes, I mean, I believe that. I truly do believe that. But yes, I mean, going back to stress absolutely kills. But we do have to realize that we have to make sure that nothing physical is going on.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the first thing I tell patients. I say, hey, listen, you know, and sometimes family members will bring people in thinking mm-hmm. that, hey, look, there's something mental going on here. We Uncle need you Pete. To lift the right. You know, they'll just go straight to that, you know, in front of the patient, you know, but I do have to bring them back. I have to reel them back in and say, okay, I hear you. But we do have to rule out some physical things, you know, and so, cause you know, that's the last thing you want to miss. You know, you don't something going on with somebody physically, you don't want to miss that. But once we do that and we've really exhausted everything and say, hey, listen, we've done our level best to try to figure out what's going on.
This nigga crazy.
No. Oh God.
Sorry, y'all. I ain't no doctor.
Lord have mercy.
This is why.
I hear you on that.
Oh my God. I couldn't be a doctor.
I'm not gonna say this, you don't think it mentally sometimes, you know, but no, man. But at some point, you know, you do have to have that conversation.
Yeah.
But depending on the patient and reading them, mm-hmm. their body language, what they've told you so far, you know, most reasonable docs, they'll know how to approach that and say, okay, I know I can say this without losing you, but I know if I say this, we're done forever. Mm-hmm. And not just done with me, you're done with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and so we want to make sure that, you know, you're at a place where you can receive that information mm-hmm. and receive what I'm saying. And like I said, a lot of times you can't do that on the first visit.
Right.
They're just not ready for that. But when you bring them on the second or the third visit, and you say, and like I said, you review everything. You say, well, you know, we've kind of done this, mm-hmm. we've done that. And you review it in detail, mm-hmm. you know, say, well, this is what this test tells us this. You don't have that. Well, at least we don't think you do.
Right.
Now I do tell people, you know, labs aren't everything.
Okay.
You know, especially if you're looking for autoimmune stuff, mm-hmm. it can be kind of vague sometimes when you're looking for that lupus or that rheumatoid arthritis mm-hmm. and, you know, a lot of different autoimmune diseases, you know, maybe one test is weakly positive. The other test is negative. You know, that's when you kind of get into some muddy waters and stuff like that. But going back to it, it's not that two things can't be going on at once. Mm-hmm. So you do have to kind of delve into that. And oftentimes you will find some childhood trauma in the mix mm-hmm. somewhere. And, you know, and sometimes people want to talk about it with you at that moment. Sometimes they don't mm-hmm. Because maybe they haven't, to your point earlier, maybe the brain has just kind of shut that off for a while. And by the time that reignites, they're kind of tearful in the office a lot of times when you kind of delve into that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's okay. You know, we can stop here. Let's talk about this, you know, next week when you come in. And then you can kind of start talking about, well, hey, you know, did you think about this the last time? You know, would you like to talk to somebody from mm-hmm. behavioral health? Would you like to talk to somebody who can kind of get you a little help and talk about these things? Because a lot, you know, at least for me as a provider, I don't like to just throw medicine at people. Mm-hmm. Although I do think there's magic in those pills sometimes, depending on listen, you know, depending on the situation.
I don't take my pill.
You know, but at the same time, you say, well, I also want you to talk about this. You know, I want to kind of not only do that, but I want to make sure that we get you some help too.
Yeah.
You know, that you, so you can talk. And I think that really does make people feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I want to make sure that we kind of do both of those things at the same time.
Right.
And people usually appreciate that.
Right.
Say, hey, I appreciate you not just, you know, wanting to medicate me, but,
yeah,
but I also, you know, appreciate the fact that you want me to talk to somebody, and get me some help that way too.
Yes. Yeah. And we're going to talk to people other than the Lord, y'all.
That's okay? Right. Well, you know what? Oh man. I do have an opinion about that.
Well, give me the opinion, because we know that God is good, but he made therapy too. He blessed us with some therapy.
Yes. Well, you know what? You know, I'll tell you something. I'll tell you something personal. You know, fall of 2017, my mother was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer.
Oh, my goodness.
And what was frustrating at the time was that she was getting mammograms every year. And at that time, she was not getting a 3D mammogram,
mm-hmm,
right? You know, they weren't as prolific as they are today.
Right.
And so she insisted on getting one fall of 2017, boom, stage 4 breast cancer.
Oh.
And so she was going to, she was going downtown Charlotte, well, uptown Charlotte,
mm-hmm,
you know, to CMC at the cancer center, Levine Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
They did something to make her mad. So she ended up going to MD Anderson. She liked that for a while. Then they said something to piss her off, and she left again. But I think that, you know, she was on the computer all the time, Googling stuff. I think the internet is great, but the internet will kill you too.
WebMD.
You know? Yes. Because, you know, patients don't know what's reputable.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what isn't. She had me talking to some doctor in China one time.
Oh, my.
On the phone, and I had to say, look, please stop calling my mother, you know. You know, but she went to Mexico to get pumped full of vitamins, and all the while her cancer was untreated.
Oh my goodness.
By the time she listened, and I got her on Duke's doorstep, because I was working there and I'm still working there now. By the time she got on Duke's doorstep, to their credit, now they helped her, she had some quality days, but they just couldn't get ahead of it, you know, and she did some chemotherapy and it worked for a while. But then, you know, she did eventually succumb to cancer. All the while that she was doing that, she would always say, well, the Lord said that he would heal me for his glory. He will heal me. He will heal me. But I used to always say, Ma, you know, maybe God sent these people in your life to try to heal you, you know, or at least try to give you some better days, you know, so that you can spend that with your grandchildren, you know, and everything. And so, but she stuck to her guns. And but I agree with you that, you know, there are some things you can't pray away.
Nope.
And I think that, you know, childhood trauma is one of those things. For the very reasons that we were talking about before. I think God works through people. And I've said this before, you know, you read the Bible and you say to yourself, well, man, why couldn't God just come down and build that ark? You know, why can't he do that himself? You know, why couldn't God
be so easy?
Why couldn't God just free the people, you know, in Egypt?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why didn't he didn't need Moses for that? You know, why did God need Jesus to come down and save all of us with his blood?
Mm-hmm.
You know, God works through people.
Mm-hmm.
We are his hands. We are his feet.
Yeah.
And I would like to think that as a physician, that I am a part of that, that I am a part of that body of Christ. I'm that part of the hands and the feet that heal, that try to heal. I am not perfect by any means. I'm not a perfect doctor, but I try to do right by people, you know, and so having that conversation about childhood trauma, you know, I try to do that and I try to do the best that I can But yes, I truly believe that you cannot pray this away.
No.
Childhood trauma cannot be prayed away. You're going to have to get help.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. And I think that because you mentioned earlier, it like all trauma, but mm-hmm. I think specifically childhood trauma, people really just try to bury it. Like, act like it never happened.
Because it's so painful.
Yeah.
Because it's so painful. Yeah. You know, it is heartbreaking when you have people who come into clinic, especially kids who have been sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
And they're you're just finding that out for the first time.
Yeah.
And you want to get them help immediately. You want to get everything on board immediately. You know, it is because, you know, you have to get everybody involved in that outside of the clinic to get them help. Thank God we have mandatory reporting laws. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if any doctor or nurse or anybody in that clinic suspects something, they have to report it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it turns out not to be anything, you know, we have to report it.
Yeah.
You can say, I would rather do that and be wrong and apologize later.
Yes.
You know, for something like that, then apologize for saying, well, you know, I thought A, B, and C, well, I thought they were going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, and so you just, with anybody that you suspect of childhood trauma like that, you know, physical, emotional, mental abuse, you know, you want to get on that early.
Absolutely.
You want to jump on it and not feel bad about that.
Yeah.
At all.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you mentioned that. So what do you think, like, some of, like, can you explain how the nervous system kind of, I guess, reacts, maybe that fight or flight type reaction to the childhood trauma?
Yeah. I mean, you know, so there, you know, in science, you know, we talk about the parasympathetics and the sympathetics. Mm-hmm. So in other words, there's some things you can control and some things you can't. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about the parasympathetic system, no, you're talking about those nerves that you just can't control, mm-hmm. right? You know, you're talking about, oh man, something happened, and you just feel this flush come over you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're having a panic attack. You know, you say, man, I just can't control this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stop.
Yeah.
You know, you know, you feel flush. You feel nauseated. You feel like, you know, you may even vomit. You know, you get short of breath. You start having chest pain.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're having a heart attack.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, well, man, you know, why do I feel this way? That's kind of that fight or flight type of thing. You know, that's that, or rather the parasympathetic that you just can't control.
Right.
You know, so your body, like I said, is very smart.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to alert you that something is wrong.
Right.
It's trying to tell you that, hey, you know what? You've been ignoring this.
Mm.
Please take care of it. So we don't have to do this again. So I tell people that, you know, and I tell patients that, and sometimes it's hard for them to hard to get that buy-in from them.
Yeah.
Because they say, well, I just don't believe that, you know. but it's true, you know, and I tell people that all the time. I say your body is very smart.
Mm-hmm.
It knows exactly what it's doing. It's trying to communicate with you as best as it can.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, even, you know, with the physical things, you know, heart attack or stroke or something like that, usually there are symptoms before that, you know, that we just don't pay attention to.
Right.
You know, and then finally it says, well, I give up. I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and have this heart attack because that's the only way to get your attention.
You're not listening.
Right. or, you know, I'm finally going to have this horrible panic attack, or I'm finally going to have this horrible depression episode. I'm finally going to, you know, have this bipolar thing going on. You know, it's you know, childhood trauma is just not something that is easily seen.
Right.
And it's challenging.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's challenging when people come in because it's not always apparent, because oftentimes they're an adult by then,
mm-hmm.
and that's not the first thing out of their mouths,
right?
The first thing out of their mouth is the physical thing going on.
Yeah.
And so you'll sit there for the whole visit and thinking that you're dealing with a physical thing and you're not.
Yeah.
you know, or sometimes it is a physical thing, but it's a physical thing stemming from the childhood trauma.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, you often don't get to that until the second or the third visit. You know, sometimes it's even more than that.
Yeah.
You know, until you say, and by that time you've done a lot of tests by then, a lot of scans by then, and you just say, well, it's just not making sense.
Right.
You know, we're going to have to look at some other reasons.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if somebody like one of your patients or anybody suspects that they're having like a, that their physical issue is actually trauma related, what would be your advice for them to do? Like the first thing they should do?
If they believe it's trauma related?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? The first thing that I would do, if they believe it's trauma related, to say, hey, I'm glad you told me that. Let's get you some help. And, you know, and as we talk more, we'll say, okay, is this more, is it causing you like more panic attacks? Is it causing you more anxiety? Is it causing you any depression? Because, and the reason why I like to kind of separate that out a little bit is because if we start any medicine, then there are medicines that are out there that are better for depression or anxiety or panic attacks. There are specific medicines out there that I would say, well, you know, maybe we can try to start you on this medicine. And I love what you said, because a lot of those medicines don't work right away.
Right.
It takes like maybe 4 to 6 weeks to kind of get inside of you and start working. And then, you know, we got to get you into a behavioral health specialist and everything too. But the key is that if they think that something is going on trauma wise, come in and see us.
Yeah.
You know, tell us, you know, because we want to get things started right away. We want to, we want you to feel better.
Yeah.
You know, and so the only way to do that is to communicate that and don't feel that you're being judged because you're not.
Okay.
You know, I think patients a lot of times think that doctors just live in a genie bottle, you know, and we just, hey, I'm just here to help you.
Right.
Let me go back in my bottle now. And, you know, it's not like that.
Yeah.
We have problems too. You know, we have trauma too that we're dealing with. We take medicine too. You know, nobody's going to judge you.
Right.
You know, you know, and I tell patients, I say, yes, you know, we see this all the time. Don't feel that you are being judged because you are not, you know, not at all. You know, we have depression too. We have anxiety too.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing that you're worried about with your kids, the same thing I'm worried about with my kids. The same thing you worried about on your job, I got to deal with crazy people on my job too.
Sure.
You know, you know, I'm talking about the people you're working with, you know, and working for, you know what I mean? So, hey, I got to, you know, I mean, when we say this in jest, but you know, we're dealing with the same problems that our patients are dealing with, you know, it's just that, you know, we can recognize a little bit more because we've been trained in it a little bit more, you know, but yeah, I mean, I tell people all the time, say, if you think that you're suffering from this, come in and talk to us, tell us a little bit more about what's going on, you know? And so, yeah, I think that's the main step is communicating that.
Okay.
You know, even if you don't want to come in right away, communicate that to a trusted member of your family or a trusted friend. You know, somebody that you trust that can bring you in, you know, if you don't want to come in by yourself. And I tell people all the time, I say, man, bring your family.
Yeah.
Bring somebody you trust up in there with you. Because I mean, I got enough room in the office for all of you. You know, we can talk as a group, you know. So I just want people to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and I want them to feel like they're in a safe space. And that's the main thing.
Yeah.
You got to provide a safe space.
Because I feel like when I go to the VA clinic, they have these new questions, maybe a couple years old.
Yeah.
I feel like they just ask these questions because they are mandated to ask them.
We are. Yeah.
And the couple questions that they ask that are new questions, I feel like should be taken a little more serious. But I think they just, oh, let me just check this, check.
Right.
This. Do you feel like you're being harmed at home? Do you feel like you're going to harm yourself? Like these questions, I don't feel like they take them as serious because maybe not that I have felt that way, but maybe somebody does feel that way. But the way you're asking me these questions, I feel like it's a checklist and you really don't care. So I'm not going to tell you anyway.
I, I understand what you're saying, you know, because, you know, especially if they're doing a 12-hour shift and they're doing this with every single patient that come through. All right, you want to harm yourself? You know?
Yeah, it's like, well, do you really care? Shit. Well, now I'm going to go harm myself because now you're another person that don't care.
Right. So that's one of the things we can do better, right? You know, that communication with people, you know, treating everybody truly as a new patient, right? To say, hey, listen, I'm going to ask you some questions. I really want you to be honest with me.
Absolutely.
Do you feel like you want to harm yourself in any way? You feel like you want to harm anybody else? Do you feel safe at home?
Yeah.
You know, those type of things. Because we're mandated to ask those questions too.
Yeah.
You know, for depression and anxiety.
Because what if I just got beat up at home? Right. You just asked me now. I don't feel safe answering it because you don't really care.
And I've had people tell me that before. Say, hey, listen, you know, I mean, you know, you guys ask these questions. I know you guys have to ask these questions. But, you know, I don't feel comfortable asking these questions because, you know, I mean, answering these questions because, you know, you guys just kind of going through the motions, you know. So we do have to do a better job at that. We have to do a better job at, you know, making sure we communicate to people that we're not just going through the motions. Because we really do care. But I will tell you that even though you might hear that tone from people because they might be like, oh, man, you know, we do care. Because, I mean, I will tell you that even before I walk in with a patient, you know, I would have nurses, I would have x-ray techs, I would have anybody in that clinic who has come in contact with the patient before me, you know, who has maybe put the patient in the room and asked these questions. I mean, they will often come out and say, hey, listen, doc, you know, before you walk in, you know, she's telling me this or he's telling me this. But, man, you know, just be on the lookout for this because, you know, I did ask this and they just kind of, you know, said this or said that. And it just kind of made me feel some kind of way about that. Uh-huh. You know, so, you know, most people have good teams. Now, do we have some knuckleheads in the medical profession? Right. Absolutely. No doubt about it. But I will say that most people are really trying to do good by you. And if they suspect something, you know, especially, you know, those who are good at their jobs, I mean, they're going to say something. You know, a lot of times they'll say something to me before I even walk in. Yeah.
Just tell them to be cognizant of those of us who do have anxiety, are very charismatic.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Robin Williams, I mean, like the funny people that can hide it.
So right.
Just be aware of those types of things.
You're right. All. Absolutely. No doubt about it. I mean, when people come in, and that's another challenging thing.
Yeah.
You know, people come in and to your point, charismatic, funny, tell jokes and stuff like that. We do have to pay more attention to that because not everybody is just, huh, woe is me type of thing. A lot of people express anxiety and depression in different ways. And we have to be aware of that. Just because people are appearing happy doesn't mean that they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I got two questions for you and they have nothing to do with this.
Okay.
I ask everybody on my show these questions, but you can make them about this if you want. First question, what is the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I've ever received. You know what? The best advice I've ever received from somebody was from a guy. I'll tell you a quick story. It was advice, but he wasn't telling me it was advice. Mm-hmm. But when I look back on it, I've always tried to do this from then on out, although it probably came late in my life. There was a guy, he was in his 90s. Mm. I was in the ER and he was having a stroke. Mm. And now we had something, you know, called a telestroke where, you know, a neurologist comes up on screen. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a mid-sized ER, so we didn't have a neurologist there on site. Mm-hmm. And okay. So came up from MUSC.
I'm sorry. This visual was so bad.
No. Actually,
the doctor comes up on the screen. What AI shit?
No. I'm the ER doc. I'm there. But
I want to refund all my health care. Lord have mercy.
No, but we do have a neurologist comes up on the screen. Right now, he's way over in Charleston. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, he kind of has the nurse go through certain things with the patient. Mm-hmm. Has me go through certain things. You know, me being the ER doc, and so he comes back to me a few minutes later. He says, "Well, you know what? I think we should give him this medicine. You know, kind of help bust up this clot that he's got in his artery in his brain." You know. And so I'm going to the patient because he understands me. He's looking at me. He's talking to me a little bit. And I'm talking to him and I'm saying, okay, now, Mr. So-and-so, you know, you're 90 something years old. So the chances of you having a brain bleed of this medicine a little bit higher, you know, that type of thing. And he looks at me, man, and he looks me dead in my eye. He says, "Hey, doc, I'm 96. Take a chance." So I said, from then on, man, I just say, you know what, man, I don't care what happens, I'm taking a chance.
Take a chance.
You know, because for so long, for a lot of my life too, I played it safe, right? Mm-hmm. You know, wanted to be a doctor, played it safe, you know, get these grades, you know, to kind of get into medical school, play it safe, don't take any chances, do your thing. Get out, you know, get this job. Hey, don't wrestle the waters. You know, you're making some good money finally in your life, you know. But you know what? That was the best advice is take a chance. Take a chance in your life. Yeah. You never know what's going to happen.
Right.
You know, do the right things, but say yes to some things that you wouldn't have said yes to. Mm-hmm. You know, and I try to tell my kids that, too. Like, hey, you know what? I do want you to do the right things. So I want you to stay out of trouble.
Right.
I want you to take a chance on the right thing. Yeah. But I do want you to take a chance. You know, yeah. If you want to major in this, major in it, man. I mean, do your thing. You know, I want you to feel like you have done what you have wanted to do in this life.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want you to have any regrets.
Absolutely.
You know, take a chance with this woman or this man, you know, take a chance with that job, take a chance moving to this place, you know? So I want you to just not play it safe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want you to take a chance. And I think that's the best advice I've ever been given is
that's
just to
good.
Take a chance.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Last question. What advice would you give 15-year-old Brian Walker?
I'm laughing because I know exactly what I was doing at 15. Professing my love to some girl living down the street.
Oh, my goodness.
I really was. I loved her.
Oh, jeez.
But I did. But you know what? The best advice I could give to a 15-year-old me, don't care what anybody thinks because ain't nobody thinking about you. Seriously, you know, you're thinking about, oh man, if I do this, they're gonna say this, and they're gonna do that. Oh man, you know, if I do this, blah 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 blah. And even now, you know, nobody's thinking about me. You know, do your thing and do it well, and make a statement. And that's another thing I try to tell my kids, man. I say, hey, do your thing, make a statement, do it well. Don't worry about what A and B and C are thinking because they're off doing their thing, and then they're living rent space free in your brain because you think they over here talking about you. Right. And ain't nobody thinking about you.
No.
You know, so that's what I would tell me. Okay. I would say, go do your thing. Take a chance. Do your life, man. Do you.
Yes.
And don't worry about anybody else.
Because,
ain't nobody thinking about you.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you.
And sharing
thank you.
So much knowledge.
Oh,
it
no,
was
thank
very
you.
Very eye-opening. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate you having me.
You're
very
welcome.
Humbled to be here. Thank
no
you.
No problem. This is a part of the show where I allow you to tell people if you want them to follow you on social media, if you want to... If you want them to come to your practice, whatever you want to promote, whatever you want them to pledge up, I don't know. Whatever you want to tell people.
Well, look, I mean, if you're in the Raleigh area, you know, come on out to Duke Urgent Care. Now, I'm actually at the Wake Forest office, but, you know, come on out and see us. We have 9 urgent cares out there in Raleigh. They're all great, you know, great teams out there. But now here in Charlotte, you know, starting in October, I'm going to be with Novant Health. you know, you come on out and see me at the Waverly office. I'll be in urgent care out there. You know, you come on out and see me, talk to me. Happy to see you, talk to you. You can always find me on social media. I just got back on Facebook. Send me a message. I'm happy to talk to you. Happy to see you. You know, so I look forward to talking to you.
Thank you. Well, y'all know who I am. I'm Dee Dee Leggett, a.k.a. the Core Queen. I help you unbig your back. I got you. Listen, y'all, I appreciate y'all for tuning into the Core Queen chat. Make sure y'all follow me on all social media platforms. Dee Dee Leggett, the Core Queen, on everything. Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat, everywhere. I'm everywhere. And yep, especially on YouTube, people. I need y'all to follow me on YouTube. Subscribe to my YouTube channel, the Core Queen chat. I need you to like, subscribe, share the podcast with everybody that you know. Okay. If you want to be a guest, let me know. Hit me up. If I like you enough, I'll let you come on the show. And I will see y'all maybe next week. I'm not sure. It's 4th of July weekend. Not the holidays. My grandma's birthday. Rest in peace to my grandma. 4th of July, baby. So we'll be celebrating her life and her legacy. So I might not be here Wednesday, but I'll let y'all know. I'll check. Y'all check me out. Make sure y'all follow Brian Walker on Facebook. And check them out at the urgent care. But y'all better have some insurance because they're going to send y'all a bill. We out, y'all. Bye.
Oh, my goodness.